Act 2. 38. Exterior. The porch of Martha's house. Day. We are looking out through the open door at Davy Hopewell, who is approaching the door slowly and with growing unease. He's still got his basketball under his arm. Davy.
Mrs. Clarendon? Mrs.
Weather Lady. Voice over. Large windows should be taped to improve their integrity in the face of strong wind gusts. He stops suddenly, his eyes widening as he sees. 39. Interior. The hallway from Davy's point of view. Sticking out of the shadows are two old lady shoes and the hem of an old lady dress. Weather Lady. Voice over. Gusts in this storm may range into. 40. Exterior. The porch with Davy. His fear is temporarily forgotten. He thinks he knows the worst, that she's fainted or had a stroke or something. Davy drops to one knee and leans forward to examine her, then freezes. His basketball slips out from under his arm and rolls across the porch as his eyes fill up with horror. We don't need to see. We know. Weather Lady. Voice over.
Speeds we normally associate with hurricanes. Check the dampers on stoves and fireplace chimneys. This is very important.
Davy pulls in breath and at first can't get it out. You see him struggle. He is trying to scream. He touches one of Martha's shoes and makes a little wheezing noise. Linoge, voice.
Forget the NBA, Davy. You'll never even play first string in high school. You're slow, and you couldn't throw it in the ocean.
Davy looks down the shadowy hall, realizing that Martha's killer is likely still in Martha's house. His paralysis breaks. He lets out a shriek, bolts to his feet, turns, and pelts down the steps. He stumbles on the last one and sprawls on the walk. Linoge, voice calling.
Also, you're short. You're a dwarf. Why don't you come on in here, Davy? I'll do you a favor. Save you a lot of grief.
Davy scrambles to his feet and flees, flinging terrified glances back over his shoulder as he button-hooks out the Clarendon gate, across the sidewalk, and into the street. He pelts down Atlantic toward the docks. Davy, screaming.
Help! Mrs. Clarendon's dead! Someone's killed her! Blood! Help! Oh, God! Somebody help!
41. Interior. Martha's living room with Linoge. His eyes are back to normal, if you can call that cool, unsettling blue normal. He raises one hand and makes a beckoning gesture with his index finger. Weather Lady.
The best way to sum up what we're saying to you is prepare for the worst because this is going to be a bad one.
42. Exterior. Martha's front porch. Faintly, we can still hear Davy Hopewell bawling for help. His basketball, which came to rest against the porch rail, rolls across the boards, slowly at first, then gathering speed to the front door. It bounces up over the doorstep and inside. 43. Interior. Martha's hall, looking back toward the porch. In the background is Martha's body, just a dark lump of shadow. Davy's basketball bounces past it, leaving great big smacks of blood every time it lands. Weather Lady.
Another piece of advice? Make sure you've got plenty of Smile Boy All Beef Bologna on hand. When the weather turns nasty, nothing warms you up.
44. Interior. The living room with Linoge. The ball rolls across the floor, weaving between the furniture. When it reaches Martha's chair, where Linoge now sits, it bounces itself twice, gaining altitude. On the third bounce, it lands in his lap. He picks it up. Weather Lady. Hold sandwich.
Like a good old fried bologna sandwich, especially if the bologna is Smile Boy All Beef Bologna.
Linoge.
He shoots.
He throws the ball with superhuman force at the TV. It hits the screen dead center, sending the Weather Lady, her sandwich, and her two enormous storm systems into electronic limbo. Sparks fly. Linoge.
He scores.
45. Exterior, Atlantic Street, with Davy. He's still running down the center of the street, still screaming at the top of his lungs.
Davy.
Mrs. Clarendon! Someone killed Mrs. Clarendon! There's blood all over. One of her eyes is out. It's on her cheek. Oh, God, one of her eyeballs is right out on her cheek.
People are coming to windows and opening front doors to look. They all know Davy, of course, but before anyone can grab him and calm him down, a big green Lincoln pulls in front of him, like a cop cutting off a speeder. Written on the side is Island Atlantic Realty. A portly gentleman in a suit, tie, and topcoat, the only business garb on Little Tall Island, quite likely, gets out. We may or may not see a resemblance to the absurd mannequin on the store's porch. This is Robbie Beals, the local big deal, the unpleasant Don Beals' even more unpleasant father. Now he grabs Davy by the shoulders of his jacket and gives him a hard shake. Robbie.
Davy, stop it. Stop that right now.
Davy stops it and begins to get himself under control. Robbie.
Why are you running down the middle of Atlantic Street making a spectacle of yourself?
Davy.
Someone killed Mrs. Clarendon.
Robbie.
Nonsense. What are you talking about?
Davy.
There's blood everywhere. And her eyes out. It's on her cheek.
Davy begins to weep. Other people are gathering now, looking at the man and the boy. Slowly, Robbie releases Davy. Something is going on here. Something that may be serious, and if so, there's only one man to check it out. We see this realization dawning on Robbie's face. He looks around at a middle-aged woman with a sweater hastily pulled around her shoulders and a bowl of cake batter still in one hand. Robbie.
Mrs. Kingsbury, look after him. Get him a hot tea.
Reconsiders.
No, give him a little whiskey, if you've got some.
Mrs. Kingsbury.
Are you going to call Mike Anderson?
Robbie looks sour. There's no love loss between him and Mike. Robbie.
Not until I take a look for myself.
Davy.
Be careful, Mr. Beals. She's dead, but there's someone in the house, I think.
Robbie looks at him impatiently. The boy is clearly hysterical. An old man with a craggy New England face steps forward. George Kirby.
You want help, Robbie Beals?
Robbie.
Not necessary, George. I'll be fine.
He gets back into his car. It's too big to U-turn in the street, so he uses a neighboring driveway. Davy.
He shouldn't go up there alone.
The group in the street, which is still growing, watches Robbie drive up to Mrs. Clarendon's with troubled eyes. Mrs. Kingsbury.
Come on inside, Davy. I'm not giving whiskey to a child, but I can put the teapot on.
She puts an arm around him and leads him toward the house. 46. Exterior, Martha Clarendon's house. Robbie's Lincoln pulls up in front. He gets out, surveys the path, the overturned walker, the open door. His face suggests that this might be a little more serious than he at first thought. But he starts up the path anyway. Leave it to that know-all Mike Anderson? Not likely. 47. Exterior. Little Tall Island Town Hall. Day. This is a white wooden building, stark in the New England style, and the center of the town's public life. In front of it is a little cupola with a largish bell inside, a bell the size of an apple basket, say. The Island Services four-wheel drive pulls up in front using a slot marked reserved for town business. 48. Interior. The Island Services vehicle with Mike and Hatch. Hatch has got a pamphlet called Storm Preparedness, State of Maine Guidelines. He's deep in it. Mike. You want to come in? Hatch doesn't look up.
Nope. I'm fine.
As Mike opens the door, Hatch does look up and gives Mike a sweet, open smile. Hatch.
Thanks for seeing after my little girl, boss.
Mike smiles back. My pleasure. 49. Exterior. Angle on the Island Services four-wheel drive. Mike gets out, once more settling his hat so it won't blow off. As he does this, he takes another small measuring glance at the sky. 50. Exterior. Mike. On the walk. He stops at the cupola. Now that we're closer, we can read the plaque in front.
There is a list of war dead on it. 10 from the Civil War, 1 from the Spanish-American, a couple each from 1, 2, and Korea, and 6 from Vietnam, the Po-Folks War. Among the names we see lots of Beelzes, Godsoes, Hatchers, and Robichauds. Above the list, in big letters, is this: when we ring for the living, we honor our dead. Mike brushes the bell's clapper with a gloved forefinger. It rings faintly, then he goes on inside. 51. Interior. The little tall island town office. It's your usual cluttered secretarial bullpen, dominated by an aerial photo of the island on one wall. A single woman is running the whole show. Plump and pretty Ursula Godso. She has a plaque with her name on it beside the in-out basket on her desk. Behind her, through a number of glass windows along the main corridor, we see the actual town meeting hall. This consists of many straight-backed benches, like Puritan pews, and a bare wood lectern with a microphone. Looks more like church than government. Nobody's out there right now. Prominent on the wall of Ursula's office is the same sign we saw on the door of the market: storm emergency possible next 3 days. Take shelter. Signal is 2 shorts, 1 long. Mike strolls over and looks at this, waiting for Ursula. She is on the phone, speaking to someone in tones of forced patience. Ursula:
no, Betty, I haven't heard any more than you have. We're all dealing with the same forecast. No, not the memorial bell, not with the winds we're expecting. It'll be the siren comes to that. 2 shorts and 1 long, that's right. Mike Anderson, of course. Those are decisions we pay him to make, aren't they, dear?
Ursula winks broadly at Mike and gives him a one-moment gesture. Mike raises his own hand and claps his fingers against his thumb several times, miming a talking mouth. Ursula grins and nods. Ursula:
yes, I'll be praying too. Of course, we all will. Thanks for calling, Betty.
She hangs up and closes her eyes for a moment. Mike: tough day? Ursula:
Betty Soames seems to think we have access to some secret forecast.
Mike: kind of a Gene Dixon forecast? Psychic weather? Ursula:
I guess.
Mike taps the storm emergency placard. Mike: most people in town have seen this. Ursula:
if they're not blind, they've seen it. You need to relax, Mike Anderson. How's little Pippa Hatcher?
Mike: whoa, that was fast. Ursula:
yeah, no secrets on the island.
Mike: she's fine. Got her head stuck in the stairs. Her dad's out in the car doing his homework for the big blow of 89. Ursula, laughing:
ain't that just like Alton and Melinda Hatcher's daughter? Perfect.
Grows serious.
People know this one's bad, and if they hear the siren, they'll come. You needn't worry about that. Now, you came to look at the emergency shelter setup, didn't you?
Mike: thought it might not be a bad idea. Ursula gets up.
We can handle 300 for 3 days, 150 for a week. And if what I'm hearing on the radio is right, we may have to. Come on, let's look.
They start out of the room, Ursula leading. 52. Interior. Robbie Beals, close up. His face is horrified, unbelieving. Robbie:
oh, my God!
Weather Lady, voiceover:
saw enough doom and gloom already. Let's talk sunshine.
The camera pulls back, and we see he is kneeling beside Martha in her hall, performing the useless ritual of trying to take her pulse. We can see her wrist and the blood-stained cuff of her dress, but that's all. Robbie looks around, unbelieving. In the background, the weather lady is spieling on. Linoge broke the TV, but she's there just the same. Weather lady, voiceover:
the finest weather in the U.S. today? Well, there's no question about that. The big island of Hawaii. Temperatures in the high 70s to low 80s, plus an onshore breeze to cool things off. And things ain't too shabby in Florida, either. Last week's chill there is a thing of the past. In Miami, temperatures are in the mid-70s,
And how about Sanibel Island and beautiful Captiva? If you're down that way, you'll be picking up shells with plenty of sunshine to show you the way and temps in the high 80s. Robbie. Is anybody here?
He gets to his feet. He looks first at the walls, where some of Martha's nice old pictures are now dotted with a fine spray of blood. Then he looks at the floor and sees more blood, the thin line drawn by Linoja's cane and those big, dark smacks that were left by Davy's bouncing ball. Robbie.
Is anybody here?
He pauses, undecided, then starts down the hall. 53. Black. A bank of overhead fluorescence snaps on, revealing the spacious basement room of the town hall. This room is ordinarily used for dances, bingo, and various town functions. Signs on the pine-paneled walls remind visitors of the volunteer fire department blood drive, which will be held right here. Now the room is filled with cots, each with a small pillow at its head and a folded blanket at its foot. At the far end are stacks of coolers, cartons of bottled water, and a big radio with its digital readout flashing. Ursula and Mike stand looking at this. Ursula.
Good?
Mike. You know it is. She smiles. How's the supply closet? Ursula.
Full, just like you wanted. Concentrates, mostly. Pour the water over the powder and then gag it down, but nobody'll starve.
Mike. You did all this yourself?
Ursula. Me and Pete's sister, Tavia. Be discreet, you said. Don't panic anyone.
Mike. Yeah, that's what I said. How many people know we're stocked for World War III? Ursula, perfectly serene.
Everyone.
Mike winces, but doesn't look too surprised. Mike, no secrets on the island. Ursula, a bit defensive.
I didn't talk Mike Anderson, and neither did Tavia. Mostly it was Robbie Beals who spread the tattle. Madder than a wet hen about all this he is. Claims you're costing the town money for no reason.
Mike, well, we'll see. Pause. Tell you one thing, his kid makes a hell of a good monkey. Ursula.
What?
Mike. Never mind. Ursula.
Want to look in the storage?
Mike. I think I'll trust you. Let's go back up. She reaches for the switch, then pauses. Her face is troubled.
Ursula. How serious is this, Mike?
Mike. I don't know. I hope Robbie Beals can kick my ass for being an alarmist come town meeting next month. Come on, let's go. Ursula flicks the switch and the room goes black. 54. Interior. Martha Clarendon's living room. We're looking toward the hall door. The TV is louder. It's an ad for a litigation law firm. Have you been injured in an accident? Can't work? Lost your mind? TV announcer. Voiceover. You feel hopeless. You may even feel that the whole world is against you, but the firm of McIntosh and Redding will stand with you and see that you get your day in court. Don't make a bad situation worse. When life hands you a bag of lemons, we can help you make lemonade. Stick it to them before they can stick it to you. If you have been injured in an accident, you may have thousands, even tens of thousands of dollars waiting for you. So don't wait. Call now. Pick up the phone and dial 1-800-1-STICK-EM. That's 1-800. Robbie comes into the doorway. His arrogance and authority have gone. He looks rumpled, nauseated, and scared to death. 55. Interior, the living room, from Robbie's point of view. The TV is smashed to hell, smoking, but still the TV ad blares on. TV announcer, voiceover, continues. 1-800. Stick 'em. Get what's coming to you. Haven't you been through enough? We can see the top of Linoja's head over the back of the chair. There is a slurp as he sips tea. 56. Interior. The living room. A wider angle. We're mostly over Robbie's shoulder here, looking at the smashed but still talking TV and the top of Linoja's head. Robbie.
Who are you?
The TV falls silent. Outside, we hear the wind of the rising storm. Slowly,
slowly, the snarling silver wolf rises above the back of the chair, pointed at Robbie like a sinister puppet. Its eyes and muzzle seem to drip blood. It wags slowly back and forth like a pendulum. Manoj, voice. Born in sin, come on in. Robbie flinches, opens his mouth, then closes it again. What do you say to a remark like that? But Manoj isn't finished. Manoj, voice. You were with a whore in Boston when your mother died in Machias. Ma was in that crappy nursing home they closed down last fall. The one where they found the rats in the pantry, right? She choked to death calling your name. Isn't that sweet? Other than a good slice of processed yellow cheese, there's nothing on earth like a mother's love. 57. Interior. Robbie. Big reaction here. How would any of us react if told one of our darkest secrets by a murderous stranger we could not properly see? Manoj. Voice. But that's all right, Robbie. Another big reaction from Robbie. The stranger knows his name. 58. Interior. Martha's chair. Manoj peeks around the chair's left side wing, almost coyly. His eyes are more or less normal, but he is almost as blood-streaked as the head of his silver bludgeon. Manoj. She's waiting for you in hell, and she's turned cannibal. When you get there, she's going to eat you alive, over and over and over again, because that's what hell's about, repetition. I think in our hearts, most of us know that. Catch. He heaves Davy's basketball. 59. Interior. The living room doorway with Robbie. The ball hits him in the chest, leaving a blood mark. Robbie's had enough. He turns and flees, screaming. 60. Interior. Martha's living room, angle on chair and TV. Once again, we can see the top of Linoja's head. Then his hand appears, rolled into a fist. It hovers in the air for a moment, then one finger pops out, pointed at the TV. The weather lady resumes immediately. Weather lady, voiceover. Let's check the area apt to be most severely affected by the oncoming storm. Linoja reaches for another cookie. 61. Exterior, in front of Martha's. Robbie bolts down the steps to his car, as fast as his chubby little legs will carry him. His face is a mask of horror and bewilderment. 62. Interior, Martha's living room, featuring the TV. The camera moves in slowly on the shattered picture tube and smoking innards as the weather lady talks. Weather lady, voiceover. The forecast calls for destruction tonight, death tomorrow, and Armageddon by the weekend. In fact, this could be the end of life as we know it. 63. Interior. Linoj. Linoj. Seems unlikely, but we can always hope. He takes another bite of cookie. Fade out. This ends Act 2.